This episode of Continuing Mission is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Also, help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day by becoming a Trek FM patron through Patreon. Get access to exclusive content and become part of the team. You'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Continuing Mission, our look at the ways in which fans are keeping Star Trek alive. I'm your host, Christopher Jones, and the primary focus of this show is on the fan series, or as I prefer to call them, independent productions, that tell new stories set in the Star Trek universe. Everyone knows that in the 23rd century, if your name is called for away mission duty, you don't want to be wearing red. Many unfortunate crewmen lost their lives while donning the crimson threads, but there were a lot of other people aboard the Enterprise who managed to survive the 5-year mission despite their attire. What was life like for these men and women? A new web series from Ashley Robinson and Jason Inman called The Red Shirt Diaries aims to answer that question through the eyes of one Ensign Williams. Today, I'm joined by Ashley and Jason to learn how the series came to be, how it was shot, and what we can expect to find when we peer into the private life of the Ensign in Red. Ashley and Jason, welcome to Continuing Mission. Thanks so much for setting some time aside for me tonight there in your part of the world to talk to me about the Red Shirt Diaries.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for allowing us to help you continue your mission.
Thank you. And hopefully, I'm hoping it will be a safe mission. I'm a little bit scared now that I've got some red shirts here on the ship with me.
You've only got to be scared for me. You guys will be fine. I'm assuming you're a senior officer.
Yeah, I think I am. I have to check with the Commodore, though. She's the one that calls all the shots.
Ooh, she's tough.
Around here. So you guys are doing the Red Shirt Diaries. I talked about this a little bit on Hyper Channel when I first found out about it, and so we touched bases on Twitter after that. It's a really interesting concept, but before we talk about it, the thing I love to do here on this show is to find out about the Star Trek backgrounds of the people creating these series, because there are millions of Star Trek fans in the world, but there are only a few people who actually go to this extent of creating something that's based on Star Trek. So you must really love Star Trek to do this. So Ashley, when did you first watch Star Trek? Do you remember how old you were and what pulled you into it?
I do remember. I was 12 years old and I'd come home after school and I was watching Spike TV for some god-awful reason. And they used to run an episode of the original series and then TNG and then Deep Space Nine and Voyager. And the first episode of Star Trek I ever saw was The Arena. And I was like, man, that lizard suit, I'm totally in. And I also knew a bunch of people online who were like text role players. Like they basically just got together and wrote a gigantic story. And they were like, well, you should play Star Trek with us. And I was like, I don't know much about Star Trek. And they were like, well, just, you know, watch the show and then be a Vulcan and you can just kind of be sarcastic and it'll be great. And watching the show, ironically, the character that I really latched onto, who I really liked, was Spock. So it was fate.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that you mention Arena, because my wife is, she will not watch the original series. She knows TNG a bit. She likes Deep Space Nine. She knows Voyager. I was watching Arena one day to prep for a show we were doing here on the network, and she came in and she saw it and she said, why is there an alligator in a tunic?
Yeah, right?
So Ashley, which is your favorite series?
My favorite series is Deep Space Nine, definitely.
Oh, great.
Because I think because it's the most character-driven, and also because watching it as a young teenager, you have characters like Jake and Nog who you can really identify with. Jake Sisko is my favorite Star Trek character for a long, long time.
I'm the same. I'm a Deep Space Nine person too. And I think the reason I like it is because it's so much different. Mm-hmm. Because we've seen so many missions of the starship that goes to the planet. There's something wrong with the planet. We use a technobabble metaphor to solve the problem.
Don't speak bad about technobabble.
And then we leave. No, I love reversing the polarity of the neutron flow. But Deep Space Nine was something different. It was like you got to know these characters and who would live out there and who would live on these crazy planets that you can only fix through technobabble metaphors.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, same for me. That's why DS9 has become my favorite series as well over the years, even though I grew up watching TOS before TNG was even around. And I have come around to being a Niner, which is why I do The Orb, which is our Deep Space Nine show, mm-hmm. with Matthew Rushing every week. But Jason, for you, what was the first Star Trek series for you? How did you get into Star Trek?
The very first Star Trek episode I ever saw was a little known episode that many people don't know about this episode. And it's called Encounter at Farpoint.
And never heard of it.
I watched it live to air, the pilot episode, Next Generation. And I remember back at the time, this is, you know, I was like 4 or 5 when it first came out. And the news was going crazy. They were interviewing these people. The new captain was on the Today Show. And everybody was going crazy about this new Star Trek show. And so we turned it on and watched it. And I was in. And I was in. And ever since that point, I have watched every Trek series live to air. And I went back and rewatched the original series. And I've been to every movie at midnight. And just to let you know how much into Star Trek I was, when I was 5, I begged and begged and begged for an Enterprise D model. And they wouldn't give it to me, but what they did give me is this little kind of, it was a smaller version of the Enterprise D, and it was made out of like, it was hard. It was like, oh man, it was hard metal, and you could detach the saucer section from the engineering section. And I played mm-hmm. with that thing so much and dropped it so much that the Enterprise D started looking like the original Enterprise because the nacelles had been beaten so far vertical. Because I dropped it so many times, and because I was outside playing with it, going warp speed engaged and all that. So Star Trek has always been a part of my life. That's, you know, there you go.
I can see you outside. Warp speed engage, unnecessary saucer separation.
Yeah, it happened all the time. if you went fast in your warp speed, that saucer section would just fly off.
Just fly right off. Yeah. Okay. Well, great stories. And beyond Star Trek, you guys act and write and produce. So, Ashley, you are an actress. Tell me a little bit about other work that you've done that maybe set you up, prepared you to tell the story of the Red Shirt Diaries.
Well, I've been acting since I was 12, since about the time that I started watching Star Trek, because I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to go on these amazing adventures and play these incredible characters for the rest of my life. And then I moved to California to be a movie star, and it's been effortless ever since. I came out here and I went to school, and then I graduated and did a ton of plays. In April, I shot an independent feature film called Asmodeus, and I played a character named Jane. I'm the first one who dies in it. It's that kind of movie.
And so that sets you up to tell the Red Shirt story.
Right there. Totally.
You died early on.
And which ironically I might survive depending on how it goes. And I've been writing and producing like plays and short films in school and a little bit outside of school. So a lot of that and having to accidentally be like a boss or a leader set me up to be able to try to wrangle. We had a lot of cast for this. Not as much crew, but we had like a lot of people, especially for our 4th episode, The Naked Time. There were like just so many people on set. So yeah, just
and my stipulation of working on this was I don't want to wrangle any of the crew.
Yeah. Although you wound up being the director, so there you go.
Yeah, that's true.
How about you, Jason?
I've always wanted to write, and in college I had all these ideas for films and I could get nobody to shoot or edit them. So I eventually just started learning. And mm-hmm. I learned and learned and learned. And eventually got to the point where I got tired of it being like a hobby, or I had this day job and I was making decent money, and I was like, you know what? I don't want it to be a hobby anymore. So I packed up my car, moved to LA, and ever since I moved to LA, I actually have been working for YouTube more than any other place. Like, I got hired with this one YouTube company, and then I just quit recently. I left Rhett and Link. They're these comedy duo that do this gay show called Good Mythical Morning. And I decided to move on to my own and do my own thing now. And Red Shirt Diaries is part of my own thing now. And so now I'm out in freelance internet world making things and doing stuff and making movies. And I don't know. Where does this end?
With Batman.
There you go.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, didn't you just recently win an award for best parody?
I won that last year, and we won that for the Geekies 2013 Geeky Awards. As the short I made in the beginning of 2013 called The Walking Dead Christmas Special, and it was basically like imagine seeing a commercial on AMC for an episode of The Walking Dead, but it's the Christmas episode of The Walking Dead that you never saw. and we entered it and it got picked up on a lot of, that is probably my most one of my most watched videos, but more websites picked up that video than probably any of my other videos, which kind of surprised me.
Interesting. So you have a Blu-ray gun then?
No, I don't, because they had little like honorable mention awards, and the best parody was one of those honorable mentions. So oh, okay. Next year, right.
When we enter the Red Shirt Diaries.
So it's like the Emmys or the Oscars, where awards also given at a separate location three days ago, kind of thing. Okay. Still counts.
I was a nominee that could have gotten one of the Blu-ray guns, but I didn't get one, so they were just like, well, here's the side award.
Okay.
And I'm still very proud of it.
I've been there with the Webbies before, being a nominee, but not actually getting to bring the little slinky home. So, all right. Well, let's talk about the Red Shirt Diaries itself. When did you first come up with the idea to tell this story of Ensign Williams, a red shirt, aboard the Enterprise during the original 5-year mission?
I've had this idea since about 2010 in sort of one idea or the other. And I've never watched the original series in order. And I've seen, I think, probably about 70% of the episodes. And so I wanted to go and, watch them in order on Netflix because they're available. And then do kind of a reaction vlog. But I don't know much about shooting, and I don't know much about lighting, and I don't know much about editing. So I never sort of stepped up and did it by myself. And then I met Jason and I told him about this idea I had, and he was like, that would be super easy. This was in about December last year. He was like, we can do it. And then we built the set with our bare hands and wrote the script and bought a China ball and shot it. So that's probably where the idea first came from.
And she said red shirt and Star Trek, and I was like, I'm in. I just don't want to wrangle the crew.
Yeah. And we surprisingly had a lot of the props already.
When you're watching the original series, did it ever cross your mind, like, who are these people that keep getting killed? Or did that come to you later on where you thought, oh, it would be funny to tell their story?
Well, there was a little bit of that, definitely, because we do have like a lot of mentions. If you actually go and watch the Netflix episodes, watch in order, because we did our episodes in order of Netflix, we took little Easter eggs and jokes from those episodes and put them in our episodes. So there are specific, like Kirk will mention like this guy named Green, and there's this other person, and then Ensign Williams will mention that person. And so there was a little bit of that, but a lot of it was like thinking about what would it actually be if you're there? Because if you actually go back and watch the original series, it's usually Kirk, Spock, McCoy, and maybe two other red shirts. And they're usually killed right away. But there's like 80 other people on this ship. What do they do? What are they doing all the time? And what
are
they
talking about?
Dodging
landing party duty.
Yeah, and who are these people?
Ensign Williams, too, was named after, there's a list online, I can't remember where it is, but it's all of the red shirts who are mentioned, and Williams is one of the red shirts who gets name dropped in the original series, so the name we co-opted from somebody who already sort of exists, and when you watch the series, too, there's a lot of just crew members who, they're not even just wearing red, like sometimes they have the blue dress on or the yellow dress on, and they're just kind of wandering around through all these crazy events.
Well, and in the very first episode, The Man Trap, there is a scene where this girl in a red dress with similar hair to Ashley walks past Kirk, and in our heads, that's her cameo in the 1966 series.
Yeah.
Excellent. So the format of this, there are 10 episodes, and it's going to start September 1st. So when this show drops 2 days later, you guys are going to be out there available, releasing every Monday, which made me wonder, how long are these episodes? How long will each episode run?
They're actually pretty short. I think the longest one is 3.5 minutes long. Okay. And we have a little teaser before the credits, and I say credits generously. And we have a little stinger after the ending credits. So even altogether, they're less than 4 minutes long. They're very short. They're short and sweet. They're like a little dessert.
Well, yeah, because that's, that's kind of what the YouTube culture has like sort of generated, is that people, you know, like they like to watch it like on a quick break, or like, oh, hey, check this thing out on my phone. And so we wanted to keep them like that. So they're very short. They're very sweet. But that's not to say that, you know, we have for certain episodes, there's bonus content, like there's bonus scenes, like our Harry Mudd episode. You actually do not see Harry in our episode. You hear him, but you don't see him. And so we shot a bonus video where you see Harry. And so we did a little stuff like that. And then there's a bonus episode with Kirk. There's a bonus episode with a couple other people. So we did little things like that. But the actual main episodes, yeah, they're all about three.
Yeah.
Was there one thought here with the teaser at the stinger at the end with your closing credits? I don't know if you've done this or not, but this is how I picture it. I'd like to see Ensign Williams. You know, in the original series, they have still shots from the episodes when they run the closing credits. I want to see Ensign Williams taking selfies of herself while the other crew members are doing something on different away missions.
Oh, interesting.
Maybe season two.
Yeah. We don't live that far from some of the old shooting locations, so we'll see.
Perfect. So you mentioned, Jason, the YouTube culture has kind of steered content creation towards these bite-sized pieces. Was this always the plan from the beginning with the Red Shirt Diaries, or did you guys originally talk about doing longer stories and then you
actually trimmed
it down?
If I remember right, the original idea was for you, Ashley, just to, we were going to make a wall that looked like the original series, or we were just going to do it green screen.
Yeah.
And you were just going to like give your opinions on the episodes, sort of like do episode reviews?
Sort of. But then we did a narrative instead. But the idea, as far as time goes, I always remember when we were writing the script, it was 5 minutes tops, 5 minutes tops. And some of the scripts, even though they're several pages long, turned out to be really short when you cut out a lot of the you know, where we broke for transitions or just like tighten the episode up a lot. So they were always designed to be pretty short. We never talked about doing anything like longer than maybe 5 minutes, and I don't think we ever hit that.
No, we didn't come anywhere close.
I'd like to see in a 3 minute short where the script is still not long enough, and so you pad for time by, say, having Ensign Williams gaze at a view screen for, you know, 10 seconds to get a reaction.
There are some awkward Ensign Williams stare off into space pauses.
There's some gazing. There's also a lot of, not a lot, but there was more than I thought, improv moments. Usually with you and the nine people you play. Jason was our auxiliary cast member, so he was like, I'm going to play Kirk. And then everyone else who needed to be played, he took on the role, so.
I just thought it would be a funny recurring joke if every other character on the show was played by one person.
Is that
okay,
what it was?
So,
no, that in arrogance.
So, Jason, you are the Jeffrey Combs of the Red Shirt Diaries.
Oh, my God, I love that.
I'm in it.
That means you have to be an Andorian in season two.
I'm there. I'll go full blue.
Full blue?
So, Jason, on the Red Shirt Diaries website, the Captain Kirk sneak peek, that's you playing Kirk.
Yes, that is. That is my fine physique and my fine voice. We have a couple of crew members that...
that you don't play?
Yeah, we have a group in the Naked Time that I don't play. I'm not Sulu. I'm not...
Spock.
I'm not Spock.
You're not Uhura.
But I'm... Harry Mudd, Captain Kirk, and is that it? I think that's it. Oh, and I'm Gertrude, who is a space plant.
You're also a couple. The puppet that we made looks a lot like the one from the original series.
Yep.
You're also a couple voices, like your various like people screaming from the hallway.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Or
yeah.
People screaming from outer space.
And I was very proud of this. I got to voice Baylock.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah. That's our finale.
I love the fact that you guys have Gertrude in here.
Yeah, and Gertrude reappears.
I remember writing that episode. We watched that episode and we were like, what are we going to do for the man trap? What are we going to do? Because it's all about a salt creature and a lot of it's on the planet. What do we do? And I literally just blurted out to Ashley. I was like, what if it was all about the plant?
And then
that's
that
awesome.
Plants stay together with hot glue and hope.
For anyone listening who doesn't know who Gertrude is the plant in Sulu's quarters. In the man trap, which is obviously someone's hand inside a glove.
A pink glove.
Squeezing. Yeah. Yeah. And when they did the remastered, I thought, like, maybe they'll replace Gertrude with just something that looks like an actual plant that can move with CGI. But nope, it's still the glove. It's just in high definition now.
And if you go to enough Home Depots, you can find that pink glove.
Yeah. It was actually really hard to find that shade of pink.
Yeah, but... yeah. We went like 8 different stores to find this certain glove.
And then we were like, well, purple work?
That shows your creative dedication that you're going to make sure that you match that shade of pink to the original series. Another shade won't do.
No. Unacceptable.
If this isn't cousin of Gertrude, this is Gertrude, the actual Gertrude.
Yes.
That's very cool. Now, you mentioned The Neck of Time a number of times, and watching the quick little trailer, there is a scene with a bunch of, at least on screen, apparently naked people behind you. I guess that must be The Neck of Time.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Maybe.
They got confused about...
That was probably the most fun episode to shoot, but also the most difficult because we were so constrained with... the angle, like how far, everyone had to be really close to me and I had to not laugh the whole time.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing. Like it was because our set wall was only so big and our camera angle was only so wide. And so we found that on like watching it on camera that like people had to be literally inches away from her. And on camera, they would look like they were feet away. And it was like, oh, weird. So like, every one of the scenes that Ashley had to play, like literally somebody was like an inch away from her nose, like almost every time. And you got over it. You got into it.
I mean, most of the people, I knew everyone who was in it. They're all, friends and acquaintances. But the hardest thing about that was just not laughing because everyone was doing such a good job. And I was supposed to be panicked, but it was just really hysterical.
Sounds like a fun set.
Yeah, man.
So with the 10 episodes, did you finish them all before you started promoting, or are you going to be working on the latter part of them perhaps in post-production after you launch the series?
We did all of them in 2 days.
Well, no. I will. Okay, I'll give this podcast something exclusive that we've told nobody else right now. They're not all finished.
All right.
They're mostly finished.
They're mostly finished. Because this is like a labor of love, and
tell me about the budget.
Yeah, like we made this whole thing for under $300, everything, and our money all went to buying some of the original series costumes, paying some of our actor friends so they could actually make it worth their time to show up, and painting the set, and that's where all of the money went to, and buying like some light bulbs from IKEA and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So are you telling me that you shoplifted the pink glove from Home Depot?
No, we bought it. I think it was like $7.
I think it was a lot less than
that. Yeah. So anytime I would come up with a gig that, could pay my rent or do this stuff like that, like I had to put red shirts to the side. Because we finished shooting in April on this.
Yeah.
And it's taken me this long. I had a thing that if I got to episode 5, if I edited all the way to episode 5, then we'll set a release date. And that'll be a little bit of a kick in my butt to finish the rest of them. And so I got to episode 5, and I think it was around the beginning of August. No, end of July, beginning of August. And I literally asked Ashley, and I was like, should we go September 1st? I'm a little nervous. Should we do it? And then I just made a poster, released it, and we were locked in.
Yeah, and that was that, because it was out there on the internet.
Once it's out there. Yeah, because people like me see it, and I talk about it on my news show, and then everyone knows about it, and then you've got to do it. So, helped give you that little kick there. But, well, no, I mean, if you guys finished shooting in April, and you're launching September 1st, and you've got five of them done, I mean, as someone who creates stuff every single day, I think that's great. I mean, you guys are actually making pretty good time.
I'll take your word for it.
Well, there's a lot of work, you know. I mean, you know, I've done videos both for my own things and for clients that are 3 minutes long. And I think people would be really surprised about how much time it takes to actually finalize 3 minutes worth of video.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of it. A lot of it. I mean, like, color correction on this thing for me was like 3 weeks.
Well, what about sound effects? Mm-hmm.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. I it's so funny. I jumping into these episodes, it's so crazy. I never realized the amount of sound effects that Star Trek uses. And it's like, oh, man. Like, I am just layering sound effect on top of sound effect on these editing timelines.
How did you create your sound effects? Did you go find sound files that are already out there? Or did you create some of your own sound effects?
They always start with, I like to find the sounds from the original series. So I always like to have those as a basis, but a lot of them I tweaked from there and I combined them with other things to kind of give them pizzazz. And to be quite honest, there are some the next generation sound effects that I'm using for different things because I like the way they sound. So you can hear the holodeck sound is in the red shirts, but I don't use it for a holodeck. I use it for something else because I just like the way it sounds and I tweaked it a little bit. If you're listening for it, you can hear it, but the other people that don't know right off the top of their head what the holodeck sounds like will never hear it.
But even if you hear it there, you know, there allegedly was a holodeck on the original Enterprise, according
to if you go by Star Trek Continues, yeah.
So. Yeah. Oh, the Star Trek, I love the way Star Trek Continues handled it because it does go back to the animated series, and the way that they handled it in Continues is like it's the early days of it. It's not really working that well yet. And having the cameo with Doug Drexler is cool as well. Now, I find sound effects very interesting because we, on one of the podcasts that we've done for Axanar, we had Frank Serafini on to talk about sound design. And he, of course, worked on the motion picture and the Search for Spock. And I think it was Mark Edward Lewis or Jesse Akins who were both on there as well. But they were creating sound effects for Axanar. And I believe it had to do with the Klingon D6s in Axanar. But they were wondering, like, how did you create that sound effect? I don't know. And they called up Frank and he said, oh, that's oil catching on fire in a frying pan.
Wow.
That's how we did it, you know, for, I guess it was on the motion picture. And they're like, well, I never thought of that, but then I tried it, and yep, that's the sound I'm looking for right there.
It's interesting the sound effects that you had to like create in Event 2. Like, we have an alien animal that appears at one point, and Jason had to create the kind of sound that animal makes. And it, when you hear it, you're like, oh yeah, that is this, and this.
Yeah, it's a mix of you'll see a space dog in one of the episodes, or you'll hear a space dog in one of the episodes. And it's a mix of like a lion, a gorilla, and a dog like whining all together.
Cool. That's fun, right? Just coming up with those.
Yeah, it is. It is, and it also does stuff where it does make it sound weird. Where you're like, oh, you know. And then that's the other thing about the sound effects is like I found there was stuff we filmed in April that I would watch and I'd be like, oh, okay, that's really funny. And then I put like a sound effect in underneath it, like one of these Star Trek sound effects, and then it immediately makes it go. Like one of the best examples was in our first episode, we have a red alert go off. And I did this like little light effect and added the sound in there. And it's amazing how much just these classic Trek sound effects just will make that scene pop. And like you're like, whoa, that is red alert. Cool,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Or they'll make moments of comedy really, really like become laugh out loud funny as opposed to just like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah, just the door sound effect. Like people walking in and out of the camera is just kind of boring, but I add that door sound effect in there and you're just like, he came into the room.
Right. Exactly. So you talked about the challenges of the cramped space earlier. Mm-hmm. Were there any other challenges that you guys faced here, especially because you had such a small budget to work with?
I smashed into the wall at one point. And I think that made it into the actual episode because Jason was like, just keep going. And then I bounced off the wall.
I think the biggest challenge for me so far our shooting schedule was a big one because we literally shot on a Saturday and a Sunday because we had all these people and I had this window of time. Ashley had this window of time and we literally were just like, all right, if we don't do it this weekend, we'll never do it. And we did 5 episodes a day and they were like 12, were they 10 hour days or 12 hour days?
They were 12 hour days.
12 hour days from like 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And it was pretty tough. And like we had a pretty tight schedule. Like we were only like, we allotted ourselves like 3 hours an episode and then move on. 3 hours an episode and then move on.
Well, it was like 2 hours and then a little break and then we had to have a lunch break.
Mm-hmm. But we did some pretty heavy rehearsals in before we ever shot anything. Mm-hmm. So the good thing was that we didn't have to do many takes because we had just nailed it in rehearsals. And so we went. But that, I remember that weekend the entire time, like my head was always like, oh, can we do this? Can we do this? Are we going to be able to get it? Because if we don't get it, if we don't get this episode, we don't get it. And we also shot them out of order because we shot them in just the easier way. The entire time my head was like, okay, we're not shooting this 1 through 10. So if we don't shoot 5, we don't have episode 5. What do? We can't release it that way.
I thought you were going to say you're doing it that way because that's how they did it on the original series. And again, you're trying to be authentic. We'll shoot them in this order, but we'll release them in this order.
I say that now.
It was a lot of like, oh, how can we get the most number of people wrapped at this one time?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, and that's another thing. That's another challenge we found is that, so most of these actors were our friends. And I like to always have a fun set. Like, if you're going to come film with me, I like that you're going to, I want to at least make you laugh and it's joy. Like you're like, oh, this is fun. But also it's like, well, I want to give you something for your troubles. Since I'm paying you, you know, very, very little, I like to not like have you spend 8 hours on my set. I like to like bring you in. Let's get your thing. Let's try a lot of different takes and then let's get you out. Because I always find that. And I also do the Scotty trick. I learned this from Star Trek Next Generation, you know, where he told Geordi that he's like, always exaggerate your times, right? You know, mm-hmm. add an extra hour. So I always do that to actors as a directing tip to any directors out there. If you tell an actor, if you know it's going to take 2 hours, tell them it's going to take 4. And then when you wrap with them in 2 hours, that actor is like, man, this director's fast and he knows what he wants.
He's a miracle worker.
Yeah.
Of course, Scotty would have told them 8.
Yeah, yeah, right.
He always goes
yeah,
by
so
a
then when he whipped
4.
It out in 2, they were like, oh my God.
Yeah. It's amazing.
He made dilithium crystals out of his bare hands. How did this happen?
There lithium in TOS?
Yeah, I got it.
So in trying to keep with the schedule where you're trying to do it in 3 hours, you mentioned earlier that Jason likes to improvise lines. How many takes did you lose because you improvised something and then everyone lost it?
You mean how many takes did we gain?
The only person who ever lost it consistently was me, so I guess that's my fault. Not a lot, but there would be times where if we wrapped early, it would be like, hey, we have this crazy idea for this extra scene that we could do, or this moment, let's just make it up and shoot it all right now. Like Kirk and McCoy.
Kirk and Dr. McCoy, yeah.
Have, I think, 3 takes of an improvised scene.
Yep.
And one of them makes it. Is one of them going to make it into the episode, or is it a
they're
bonus
all no, video? They're bonus scenes. They're bonus scenes. All of them are. But the funny thing about that is that like I just was like, okay, Kirk needs to have some sort of a scene with Dr. McCoy for like just a laugh, and we shot it once, and then the Dr. McCoy came up with an idea to completely change the story. We shot it again, and then I had an idea on top of that, and we shot it again. But I also do remember going back to Gertrude.
Oh my God!
There was a lot of stuff because I'm also the hand of Gertrude, and there was a lot of stuff that I did to Ashley to make her like. Well, I was trying to make her break. I actually, be honest,
You're
I was
such a jerk.
But just to get a different reaction, like Gertrude acted differently every take.
Yes, and Gertrude would scream at different points during different takes.
Because but part of that was in my head. I was like, if you were really in this room with the space plant, you wouldn't know how it was going to react. And you would you kind of would be that nervous and on edge. And so I was trying to recreate that, but also I was trying to mess with her.
Yeah, you and we have someone who plays a red shirt who gets turned into and Android at one point, and I ruined most of those takes because I laughed because Jason was like, yeah, just improvise and go crazy. And he did, and it was hysterical.
So if you're a red shirt, is it better to be turned into an Android than to actually die?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. The Android came back to the ship, so I guess it wasn't that bad.
The Android in our episode is still on the Enterprise, so I'm going to go yes.
Okay. So it sounds like if your options are being shot by a poisonous flower, being eaten by a beast, or turned into an android, being turned into an android
is yeah, it's probably the way to go.
Yep.
Okay. Cool. Plus, eventually you'll get to meet Data.
That's true. Oh my God. That's so cool.
So what is your favorite moment, Ashley, from, you know, Ensign Williams' life on the Enterprise?
That made it into the final episode? I think I like her interactions with Kirk a lot because Kirk is very ridiculous and very, shall we say, friendly in the Red Shirt Diaries. And I like the dichotomy of having to watch her, A, have to deal with that and try to be very professional about it, but B, still trying to make a commentary and celebrate like what was so fun but at the same time ridiculous about the original series. Like, those are some of my favorite moments are from, is it the Enemy Within?
The Enemy Within.
The Enemy Within, is that the
name? The Kirk episode. Because
we have Kirk and Evil Kirk, and right. They keep popping up, and like that was a ton of fun to shoot. So I would say probably The Enemy Within is
one. And we did that all in one take.
Yeah. So for when you watch it.
When you watch the episode. I literally was running in, running out, changing my shirt, running in, running out, changing my shirt, running in, running out.
We need a making of the Red Shirt's Diary.
Oh my God,
Blu-ray. That's what we need.
Don't put more work on my plate. I just want to add something to that question. I have my favorite moment of all of it, and this did make it into the finished episode, is the one and only time that you will see Spock. You only see Spock once, and it is at the end of Enemy Within, episode 5, and because the reason why I like that, and the reason why is because when we first were planning this whole thing, it was like our first writing session, and I came up with this joke that I don't want to spoil, but I came up with this joke that I still to this day think is the funniest joke in the entire series, and it made it all the way through. Like, it's, you will see this joke, and that was like the first joke, and then really set the tone for the Red Shirt Diaries too.
Did.
So when you're watching these episode 5, the very last scene, the scene with Kirk and Spock, you'll see how everything came from that one scene, what that one joke.
Yeah, because when we were first tossing ideas around about it, Jason was like, what about this? He says this, and Spock says this, and Kirk says this. And it's
Originally wasn't even supposed to, Spock wasn't even supposed to be in the scene.
Yeah, Spock's going to be a voiceover.
Yeah, yeah. And then I was like, oh, how much funnier would it be if you just see Spock?
And we cut, with the exception of Uhura, we cut all of the Enterprise crew that you already know from the show. We cut them all off of the head. So we had to find another body for that.
Well, that was very much an idea that, thinking of like Wilson from Home Improvement, if you ever seen that Tim Allen show, you never see his face. And since like the original cast members are, you know, they're so like, everybody knows William Shatner's Kirk. Everybody knows this is, you know, James Doohan is Scotty. And now they've recast them even more. I don't know. Sometimes I feel, especially like in our series, like since we're going for the joke and we're not like Star Trek Continues and trying to tell a story, that seeing the actor that's not Shatner or Chris Pine kind of deflates the joke because people are like, oh, he doesn't look like William Shatner. So if we never see above his neck, it can still be Kirk. And the only one you see is Uhura. And just because our friend Karshina Jefferson really looks like Nicole Nichols.
Yeah, yeah. She really looks like her.
Is that how you say her name?
Nichols? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Nichols.
Yeah, yeah. But she really looks like her. And that's the reason why we were like, oh, we got to have her on camera.
Yeah. We got to find reasons for her to come in.
Well, speaking of people like that, a quick shout out to everyone who worked on the show with you. I know from the creative side with the editing and all, you guys are tackling all this stuff, but you've mentioned that you did have a lot of actor friends come in and other people that helped. So who all helped you guys get this shoot done?
Oh, man.
Well, there's one person that I want to mention above all others, and actually two. And that is my assistant director, Jordan Keeble.
Yeah, she saved us.
She was fantastic because our original AD dropped out of the production the night before. And Jordan's a good friend of both of ours. And I called her up and was like, hey, can you help us? And she jumped in and was amazing. And I gave her, she has a cameo in The Naked Time now. And then another person that was amazing was our camera assistant, Alexander Swickard.
Yeah.
And he had some ideas for the lighting that really made, like, the final look amazing. But I will say, like, overall, like, we had the Omar and Mia were the two broke geeks from YouTube. Karshina Jefferson, of course. A whole cadre of actors in The Naked Time.
They're all going to have IMDb credits very shortly.
Yeah. we asked comic book writer Sterling Gates, who was a friend of ours. He's our Dr. McCoy. Mm-hmm. This was probably one of the most fun cast and crews I've ever worked on, just because I think very early on I was like, I really want to work with them, or I want them to be involved in this project if they're fun, because like I want the original series. What I think is one of their greatest strengths is that you can tell most of the time, there are certain episodes where you can tell that Shatner is not having a blast, but most of the time, it seems like they're just being like, I can't believe we're getting paid to do this.
Right.
You want me to punch a Gorn and run around in the hot rocks? Sure. You're paying for my kids' college. I'll do this gladly. And they're like, yeah. I said, there are a few episodes. So I always feel that in a project, a video project especially, or a theater, whatever, if the people creating it are having fun, you can tell, and it sort of seeps through. And I really wanted that out there. Anybody else? Are we forgetting anybody else?
I mean, I could go through the 14 other people, but there that would go. Be lengthy.
So beyond the Red Shirt Diaries now, so eventually when you finish post-production on all 10, and these are all out there and it runs its course, do you guys have plans for another Star Trek project down the line?
We have tentative plans for tentative ideas, I guess, more than plans for a season 2, mm-hmm. Which would finish out the episodes in the first season of TOS by the end of our second season, which okay. I know is a little convoluted, if you can follow that.
Well, it's a really long. I mean, there are 29 episodes in season 1 of TOS.
Well, we're going to go for broke. We're going to go for broke for the rest of them.
But we have like some design changes that we'd like to do, and we'd really like to be able to just up, I don't know, is quality the word I want?
Yeah, sure.
Up the quality of this and like build our set out of with our bare hands with some slightly nicer materials and get some cooler, more flashing lights to put up on the panels.
And we also have a really great idea for an away mission, Red Shirt Diaries, because we're very close to Vasquez Rocks where they shot the arena mm-hmm. episode. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have some ideas. It's all about like coming up with ideas of how to find funding or figure out ways to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'd love to do a Redshirt season 2. I think that would be a total goal.
I'd like to see, you talk about away mission Redshirt Diaries, I'd like to see the stories told from the perspective of the Redshirt's ghost. So after they've died, what they think about what happened to them.
Can you edit a ghost?
I think we have to wait till Spectre of the Gun for that one.
Oh my God.
And also, you have to keep going because I just have to see your take on Spock's brain.
Oh, oh. Man. Well, I joked very, very early on, and I remember like one of our first writer meetings, and I said that if we ever got through the original series, that we were going to do spinoff Red Shirt Diaries, and it was always going to be a descendant of Ensign Williams. So you were going to see the great-granddaughter of Ensign Williams cool. on The Next Generation.
And I like it.
And then she'd get transferred to Deep Space Nine, and then she'd get transferred to Voyager.
So then eventually, when you do Enterprise, is it Ensign Williams's grandmother?
Yes.
Yeah.
Telling the stories? Cool. Okay, I like it. Maybe she knows who Chef is. Oh. You talk about people who you never see their faces here.
Well, you kind of see him.
Well, he's not Riker. Come on. Spoilers.
You
for
never see his face.
Him. He's not Riker.
You never see his face. Fun except fact. For when they show him as Riker.
Fun yeah, fact. Which is not that him. Chef was originally supposed to be played by William Shatner. They had reached out to him to play a role in the show. And they were like, we would like to reveal you as Chef. And then he came up with he pitched some sort of crazy idea for the mirror universe, and they were like, whoa, easy, Bill. You're not chef.
We could do that episode, and then Jason gets told all the time that he looks like Riker in TNG because he totally does. So you could play Riker, and you could be a facey.
Okay, well, so now I'm hearing Jason looks like Riker on TNG. Jason, how do you sit down in a chair? Do you step over the back of the chair, or do you come around the front and sit down?
No, I practiced, and you fall on your ass if you try that. So I don't know. I want to know, like, what TNG directors didn't, like, stop him and be like, whoa, 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 what was that? Or eventually if it just became, like, the running gag, like, that's how they got their jollies on set. They were like, maybe. Look, we're here for 18 hours. Do the chair thing.
So Riker comes in just for a normal scene, steps over the chair. The entire camera crew bursts out laughing. And Frakes is like, what? What'd I do? nothing. Let's just go again.
Do you think he does that at home, like at the dinner table?
I'm going to say yes.
That's why his wife bought those really high, very tall backed wooden chairs. Yep. So he can step over them.
It's actually the Riker thing, and that came from like a comment on one of my YouTube videos where somebody literally was like, "Are you Commander Riker's son?" And it's my goal. I've yet to get it, and my hope is Star Trek Las Vegas next year. It's my goal, because I affectionately call Jonathan Franks now my space dad. It's my goal to go to a convention and buy the photo to take the picture with him and make him wear an ugly sweater, and I'll wear an ugly sweater, and we have to be in a family pose.
You know, I think he'll actually do it if you can get there. He seems like a guy who would do it.
Can't wait.
He's so great with the fans at the convention.
If anybody has a connection with Jonathan Franks, at Jawin on Twitter.
Awesome. All right. Well, so again, this premieres September 1st. New episodes drop every Monday.
Yep.
And if people want to find out more about the Red Shirt Diaries in depth, watch the series, keep up with you guys in social media, whatever, where should they go?
The easiest place to go is www.theredshirtdiaries.com. The is important if you want to actually find us. We have...
Right, because you don't want to see what's on that other website.
It's not so PC. We have all of our videos there. We have links to interviews and reviews and stuff like that going up there. You can also, if you want to just click subscribe and have a little email reminder every time we go live, you can go to youtube.com/Jawin. That's J-A-W-I-I-N. And hit subscribe right there. And it's hosted there every Monday as well.
Indeed. Double places. And if you want to find... us on Twitter, it's at Jawin, that's J-A-W-I-I-N. And also Facebook updates for this will be at facebook.com/JawinTV.
Just to be difficult.
Awesome.
Yep.
Question here. I noticed the copyright on this is 2265. Does that mean it's okay for us to do whatever we want with it until that year arrives?
No, it's been copyrighted in the future through the temporal Cold War. We all know this.
Oh my God.
I see. And crewman Daniels actually brought the papers from the lawyer back to you here.
He comes out of the closet. Don't worry about it.
I just thought it was funny on the site that they let you change the copyright. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to make this the in canon year for Star Trek.
Awesome. I like it. All right. Well, Ashley and Jason, thanks so much for joining me today. I really had a blast talking to you guys about the Red Shirt Diaries.
Thank you for having us.
Indeed.
Well, I hope everyone enjoyed hearing about the Red Shirt Diaries today. That was a really fun discussion. So thanks so much to Ashley and Jason for dropping by and laughing their way through TOS with me. It was great. I hope you enjoyed it too, but this isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network this past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
We're on the same page.
Yes.
High five.
This is creepy.
Yeah.
We actually did it, too.
You guys missed it. We actually tried to do a high five through the camera, so that was embarrassing, but whatever.
Continuing mission.
I feel like this, like, that's a really great idea for a stoner movie, so maybe for the next project? I don't know.
And the name of the film will be Giant Green Lazy Susan.
There you go.
Earl Grey.
VHS Star Trek interactive board game.
I'm so glad you brought this up.
You might have taken over the Enterprise. You now have 30 minutes to stop me.
The Ready Room.
He says, I think your compassion for this species is overriding your judgment. And Archer says, my compassion guides my judgment. Mm-hmm. And I really like that line because I felt like that really just kind of sums everything up.
The orb.
So imagine we didn't have Opaka. Imagine we had Kai Winn from the very beginning. How do you think the setup of the series would have been?
Axanar, the official podcast.
So is the full-length Axanar going to be in the same style, the same documentary style as Prelude to Axanar? And the answer is no. No, absolutely not. Axanar itself will be a full-length movie, a feature movie, just like you would, you know, any other Star Trek movie or other movie.
To the journey!
Cable is definitely more suited toward a niche show like Star Trek is.
Compared to broadcast, yes, I think it's...
Yeah, absolutely. It's much more probable that we would see it on, say, AMC than we would on NBC.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
When Star Trek 2009 came out, I made a joke to somebody at some point that J.J. Abrams got all of his lens flares from Close Encounters surplus.
Yeah.
But they just didn't use them all, and he just bought them at some sort of, maybe a garage sale or something.
Warp 5.
You know pretty well which way the insectoids and the reptilians are going to come down on any issue. It's left up to the indecisive one. Instead of the 12 angry men, it's the 6 angry Zindi.
Melodic Treks.
Now, as I mentioned, he wrote and conducted the scores for 2 episodes of Star Trek Enterprise in the 2nd season. They are Kanamar and Regeneration. And Regeneration is one of the best episodes of Star Trek Enterprise ever, in my humble opinion.
Literary Treks.
We're trying to keep it light. We're trying to keep it personable. We're trying to keep it fun. If Vanguard, you know, was all about being the Battlestar Galactica reboot of Star Trek, this is more about trying to be the Eureka or the Warehouse 13.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find us everywhere you get your podcasts. We're all over the place. Just search for Trek.fm or the name of the show you want to listen to, and you'll find us there. And be sure to grab the master feed. That contains every episode of every show that we do, plus some other special content from time to time. And it's a great way to sample the wide range of topics that we discuss every single week, really every single day here on Trek FM. While you're getting your podcasts, please take a moment and leave us a review, especially on iTunes, where it does make a difference in how easy it is for other listeners to find our shows. We love to hear from you and hear what you think about the shows. And also, there are many fans of Star Trek fan series and independent productions out there and games, which we talk about here on the show from time to time also, who may not know about Continuing Mission. So a review from you really will help them find it. It only takes a minute, and we really appreciate hearing your thoughts on the show. Another way you can support Continuing Mission and the network is to become a Trek FM patron on Patreon. If you're not familiar with Patreon, it's a lot like Kickstarter, except that instead of being for a single project, it's an easy way for you to support the creatives you love on a monthly basis. If you've been thinking about contributing to Trek FM or just wondering if there's a way that you can help support our programming, you can do it on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm, and you'll find our page there. We post different content there, have discussions with our patrons, those who support the show, and we also publish our shows there. If you are a patron at the $15 level or higher, you can even get access to some of our shows early before they're released to the public. There are many other perks for you to get as well, ranging from digital wallpaper, having your name on the supporter list on our website, or actually getting associate producer credit on different shows, joining podcasts with the hosts, being part of our content development group. There are lots of different things that you can get in exchange for your contributions and your support. Also, we have outlined goals there. These are things that we are trying to do at the network right now that we need support with. So it's all outlined very clearly what those are, what we need in order to make them happen, and what you get in exchange. So I hope you'll drop by and support us. You know, we do the network for you. We do it to to bring new Star Trek discussion to help you with your work days and your commutes and just find new things in Star Trek. And we love talking to you guys. But we do need your support because it does cost quite a bit for us to run the network every single month. We would like to give a shout out, in fact, to our first patrons because we just launched our Patreon account a few days ago. We'd like to thank Renee Roberts, Mike Crate, Felipe Garcia, Romy Zacher, James Keith Gardner, Lisa Stevens, R.E. Ward, and David. I don't know David's last name, but thank you, all of you guys, for being the first patrons there on Patreon. Again, that's patreon.com, patreon.com/TrekFM. Thanks so much for your support. If you'd like to share your feedback on today's show, there are many ways that you can do that. You can go to our website at trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. And if you choose to send to a show and choose continuing mission, that will come to me by email. We can also be found in social media. Our username on Twitter is TrekFM. Facebook.com/TrekFM is our group there. We also have a community on G+. You can send me a voicemail also, which I would love. To do that, look on the show page on our website in the left sidebar, and you will see the tool for that. Or go to speakpipe.com. That's the word speak and the word pipe. Speakpipe.com/TrekFM. And all you need is the microphone on your web camera or your smartphone or your tablet to record your message, and then you can upload it to me right there from the page. So I'd love to hear from you by voice. If you'd like to find me, you can find me in social media. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. That's my username pretty much everywhere. So you'll find me there on Twitter, also facebook.com/C. Brian Jones. Feel free to hit me up there and send me a friend request. And I have my own website also at cbrianjones.com. And then as far as Star Trek discussion goes, I do a lot of shows on the network. There's Literary Treks, The Orb, Warp 5, Matter Stream, The Ready Room, Hyper Channel, and I co-host the official Star Trek Axanar podcast with Axanar creator Alec Peters. So check out all of these shows and find out what else I'm talking about in the world of Star Trek. Lastly, before I let you go, I would like to remind you about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com. Audible is one of my favorite services. I have been using them for 14 years to get my audiobooks. They used to keep me sane when I had a 4.5-hour round-trip daily commute to work here in Tokyo. That was in the days even before iPods were around. So I love Audible, and I know you will too. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying Audible. Just go to audibletrial.com/TrekFM and sign up. Choose whatever book you want, absolutely free. If at the end of the trial you decide not to stick with Audible, there's nothing to lose. You'll get to keep that book. But when you try Audible, it really does help us keep continuing mission and all of our shows coming to you each week, because we'll get a little cut from Audible that helps out with our hosting and our bandwidth costs. So try them out, audibletrial.com/TrekFM. And we really thank Audible for their support of the show and the network. Well, thanks again to Ashley and Jason for dropping by today to talk about the Red Shirt Diaries. I hope you'll all go to the website, go to YouTube, check it out. The trailer is really funny, and I just can't wait to see what's going to happen in those 10 individual episodes. And let's support them, because they've got to get all the way to season 3, because my life will not be complete until I see their take on Spock's brain. And I hope you feel the same way. So thanks again for listening, everyone. Join me again next time here on this continuing mission, and let's see what's out there.